And there was one. The one and only Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com. I'm your hostess of this here engineering podcast, Amelia Dalton. Folks, we have an overflowing bounty of board design beautification to throw your way this week. We've got a little mini PCIe, VPX, VNX, mid-planes, back-planes, and more single-board computers than you will ever know what to do with. My guest is Bill Ripley from Alligator Designs, and we're talking about all of this and more. Let's go.
My guest today is Bill Ripley from Alligator Designs. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me, Bill.
Thank you.
So first off, for my audience who may not know, what is Alligator Designs all about?
Alligator Designs is a company of approximately 200 people. Traditionally, we played in the marketplace by providing piece parts and systems and everything from, you know, backplanes and chassis to completely integrated systems to other embedded computer suppliers whose names you would recognize.
Okay.
And we provided those globally. Right now, our new initiative is to go global and promote our products directly from Alligator Designs into the American market and the European market as well.
Okay. So let's talk about designing hybrid rugged systems. So first off, what does a hybrid rugged system entail? And then how do standards help in the creation of these systems?
What we refer to as a hybrid system is a system that applies several different industry standards. And they may not all be VITA standards, some are PCMIG standards, some are other standards, but they're standards nonetheless.
Yeah.
So when we're building a hybrid system, we want to be able to go find the best fit from a functionality perspective for the single board computer and the I.O. cards and other sensor packages that may be included as part of the system.
Yeah.
We're introducing the new Falcon series here this week that we call the Falcon 2.
Okay.
And it is it's a hybrid system that has what we call a mid-plane on it.
Okay.
A mid-plane is essentially a backplane, but a backplane generally connotates that you're building all to the same standard. So you have a 3UVPX standard or a 3UVPX backplane or a VPX backplane or a VME backplane. In this case, we call it a midplane just to make sure everybody understands it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
And we have set it up to where we can, in this particular model, we can go in and accept a ComExpress conduction-cooled ComExpress Type 6 single-board computer or a conduction-cooled ComExpress Type 2 or Type 10 single-board computer. And what that means is that on this mid-plane, we can put the right amount, you know, we kind of right-size the processing.
Yeah.
We can put everything in there from, you know, all the way down to an ARM processor, all the way up to a Xeon processor with i7s and the AMD G series, you know, system-on-chip and things like that in between.
Yeah.
We can do PowerPC architectures. We can do Intel architecture processors. We've also, in designing the system, we looked at a whole host of boards that we selected that were going to be the boards that we would offer in this system and made all the necessary arrangements for jumper swapping and be able to go use, you know, multiple vendors' boards in a system. The next interface that we put in there was an XMC interface. XMC interfaces are very, very popular, especially in the embedded military marketplace, which is our key focus area. So we've gone out and looked at the marketplace for the popular, most used XMC modules for graphics, which are, for instance, ESO rugged systems. You know, makes a series of very nice graphics cards that can be used. And they have video frame grabbers, they have cards that'll generate graphics, they'll have cards that can bring video in, do overlays, and put video out to display. So we made sure that we could accommodate all of those graphics cards. And there are other manufacturers as well that we considered. And then the next standard that we introduced in this system was Mini PCIe.
Oh, okay.
Mini PCI Express. Mini PCI Express is a very nice little standard making, you know, small, you know, roughly half the size of a business card. I.O., you can get 1553, you can get ARRIC 429, you can get discrete, you can get serial, fiber channel, firewire, you can get FPGA functionality, just pretty much whatever you need is available in a mini PCIe format. We've also adopted, there's a company in the marketplace called Acromag that came up with a real clever idea of putting a standard interface 100-pin connector, you know, a very high-frequency connector,
yeah,
to bring all the I.O. out. So we have implemented that same connector in the system, so we can go in and use any of their modules, and
they've
standardized the I.O., or we can build a little pigtail jumper adapter that goes with anybody else's mini PCIe card to take their I.O. and shuffle it around so that it comes out in the right places to the front of the system. We've also put provisions in here for a half SATA drive for operating system and local data support and things like that. We have added the capability to put an inertial platform in it with a GPS so that it can be used to could turn this box into a, you know, digital map that has a built-in GPS and inertial platform with it, you know, all in one platform. They're MEMS devices, but they're now available in both an industrial grade and a tactical grade with higher accuracy and less drift and things like that. The other option that we can put in the box is a mezzanine card for some high-density SATA disk drives, solid-state drives.
Oh, okay.
So by having the capability of putting in, you know, up to 4 terabytes worth of storage and being able to use a processor that has the RAID capability built in, we can have RAID storage up to 4 terabytes inside the box, you know, as an add-on option. It raises the size of the box a few millimeters to, you know, add that option. But the whole idea here is that we now have a platform that was all well thought out in advance that will employ a large number of commercial standards that are already in the marketplace in such a way that it's really a low-risk integration job. And that's something that really hadn't been done too well in the industry before. Most people would go build a system that was based on a particular project application they needed,
sure,
and then go modify that in time goes on, and sometimes the modifications start getting out of hand, and after a couple iterations, it's not really what you intended it to be.
Right. Yeah.
This one was designed up front to be very, very configurable, but we still can have the ability to go in and customize this for a particular application by changing front panel connectors and leaving options in or out and things like that. It was pretty well thought out in advance, and I think it's going to work well in the marketplace.
Excellent. All right, so speaking of new standards, you guys have just been working on VNX. So tell me more about that, and is it related to VPX?
Yes, VNX. I'm the chairman of the VNX technical committee, which in the Vita parlance is the Vita 74.0 committee. And we've been working on Vita 74 for 4 or 5 years with several embedded computer manufacturers and connector people and things like that. Electrically, VNX is identical to VPX. If you look at a VNX module and a VPX module, all the handshaking, all the control signals, all the PCI Express overhead, everything is identical. There's different numbers of PCI Express buses and the like, because in the small form factor, we don't need as many PCI Express buses.
Right.
But from a topology perspective, they're indeed identical, and it makes it really easy for somebody to take an existing VPX design or a XMC design and turn it into a VNX module. The VNX module is roughly, there's two sizes, a 19 millimeter size that's used for like single board computers and high-end FPGA cards and video frame grabbers and things like that. And then there's a 12 and a half millimeter module, which is used for I/O and memory, and we've got a small GPS in one of those or a Wi-Fi card or something like that. So things that don't take up much space, we put on the 12 and a half millimeter module, and the things that require more space, we put in a 19 millimeter module. And integrating a system is, you would do that exactly the same way you would do a VPX system.
Okay. So one last question for you, Bill. You guys offer board design as a core part of your business, but I've heard that you guys enable boards that other COTS providers can't or won't do. What's the story there?
We have our own capability for manufacturing backplanes and I/O transition boards and specialized I/O cards that you just can't go buy off the shelf.
Yeah.
So when you need those sort of services, we can go design that either for a system that we're building or a system that you're building or some other provider that you have is actually building. You know, we're not going to go design a single board computer.
Yeah.
There's no reason to do that because there are people in the marketplace that are really good at doing that. We'll let them spend the money and go design that, and we'll gladly use their product but fit it into our way of doing business.
Right.
An example is, you know, in a VNX single board computer, we have a carrier board that we designed, and then it accepts a ComExpress Mini Type 10 single board computer module as part of that interface. We take care of all the conduction cooling and building the heat frames and making sure the interfaces work right.
Yeah.
But there was no reason for us to go out and develop that single board computer module at this point in time.
Sure.
Most people don't really have the capability or want to go do one or two or three or five boards for I/O transition boards, especially in prototype phases and the like.
Yeah.
We're happy to go do that. We just need to know we can either design that board for you with a minimal amount of information, or we can go build it exactly the way that you want us to.
Gotcha. All right, Bill, it's time for your off-the-cuff question now. Let's talk about ham radio and STEM education. What can you tell me here?
I've been a ham radio operator since I was around 9 years old.
Aww.
And while a lot of people, you know, when I early life and getting married, I kind of let all that go and didn't really do much with it.
Yeah.
But here in recent years, I've gotten back into it to basically keep my wife happy. My wife is a school principal in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and she started an initiative called the STEM Trajectory Initiative, which is designed to bring STEM education into public schools, starting in elementary school and going all the way up through high school.
Yeah.
We're working in 23 different schools right now in Albuquerque.
Nice.
One high school in Albuquerque that we've been working with a lot is going to lead the effort to building CubeSat, you know, actual satellite that's going to be launched into orbit and used to be able to go bring, you know, real technology into all the classrooms that can receive it and decode the data and things along that line.
That is super cool.
Yeah. So, you know, starting last year, we started prototyping the concepts for this and launching them on high altitude balloons that we would launch that would take it up to 125,000 feet and be able to let us start, you know, testing some of the hardware that we're building.
Cool.
This year, we'll be doing the proof of concept for the actual flight-worthy, space-worthy, you know, version of this hardware. And hopefully, we're going to use Vita 74 in a new standard that's called Space VNX to be able to do that. And then the following year, we'll actually build the flight hardware that has to go to real live laboratories and NASA and places to be qualified and certified. Right now, it's a happening thing.
We're
funded through this year, and it looks like it's all coming together. So it'll be a lot of fun to do something that technical and get it launched. The kids that are working on it now are going to work on it, you know, after they graduate and go to college. We've got one kid that's going to the Air Force Academy that's a key designer, and they've already agreed to, you know, support it and let him get academic credit for it. And we've got some kids from last year that worked on the balloon projects that are, you know, we're helping us now, and we're bringing in new, younger high school students to be able to go and take their place. We're having a workshop this summer. It'll be basically an all-summer thing for 10 hours a day, and they're going to get dual credit for it for both high school physics and a physics credit in college.
That's so cool. I'm going to have to follow up with you, Bill, about this. This might be its own episode in the future.
Cool.
Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Bill.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
If you're building one of those hybrid systems Bill and I were just discussing, then you will probably need some DSP algorithms to get your sensor fusion design of your dreams up and running. Well, in that case, we need to talk about fixed point versus floating point, don't you think? As you already probably know, the trade-off between fixed point and floating point math can have huge implications on performance and precision. In a recent episode of Chalk Talk entitled Fixed Point, Floating Point, What Are the Needs of DSP Applications? Pushkar Patwaran of Cadence Design Systems and I talk about this very thing and how to make those critical decisions on floating point versus fixed point. You can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by heading on over to YouTube, or you can simply click the link below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page on eejournal.com, or you can also check out the on-demand section of eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EE Journal. It is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or heck, even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of March 24th, 2017, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.